Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast for Live the Promise. Enjoy the conversation. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you tuned in, and a very happy Friday to you. Well, here's a question for you. Have you ever considered what life is really like for those caught in the refugee crisis? I mean, what if it was you? What if it were me? Well, today my guest is Esther Havens, and last fall she traveled to Lebanon with World Vision as a humanitarian photographer. She joins us today to shed some light on how we can be praying for the refugee crisis. Before we get into that conversation, I've got a few quick announcements for you. We are really excited about our upcoming Northwestern Christian Writers Conference. We've put a lot into this. Whether you've got a dream to publish articles or write a devotional or write sci-fi, write fiction of some kind, we've got a conference for you. We've tried to have a great representation of editors, agents, and experts in the field to help you take next steps in your writing journey. We're super excited about this conference. It comes up on July 15th, Saturday. It's one day only, but we're taking registrations now. We've got close to 400 people already registered, but we're missing you. We want you there. You can check it out. We've got a website with all kinds of information on our faculty, on the workshops, on the breakouts, everything you need to know. Check it out at NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. We've got reps there from Tyndale, Zondervan, David C. Cook, Penguin, Random House, Bethany House, and more. Excited to meet with you, to teach you, to invest in your writing journey. Also, so excited about what God is doing in Faith Radio. I want to say a special thanks to everybody who joined us for Faith Radio. We are growing by leaps and bounds thanks to the favor and grace of God and to the faithfulness of your gifts. And I just want to give a shout out to anybody listening on some of our newer markets like 1290 AM Hartford and 94.1 FM West Hartford, Connecticut. Or maybe you're checking in on the FM dial 93.1 in Waterloo or 104.7 FM in Madison or 90.7 FM in the Twin Cities, or yet maybe you're streaming online. Well, I always want to meet our new listeners, especially coming in from some of these new markets or other places around the world. If you're willing to email me and include your address, I'll draw a couple of names, and I'm going to just pull some books off of our Faith Radio shelf and just send them to a few of you as our way of saying thank you, of our way of saying thank you and welcome to the family. So glad to have you listening. Susie@myfaithradio.com. That's Susie@myfaithradio.com. Would love to hear from you. Remember your address if you want in on the drawing, and just glad to have you listening. Also, if you're traveling this season, we would love for you to take us with you. We've got an amazing free Faith Radio app. Lots and lots of people have downloaded this app and are now listening to Faith Radio programs from around the world. Absolutely amazing. So if you are traveling and you want to live stream your favorite show, I don't know if you knew this, but lots of people listen to the radio on their phones now because they get so connected to their favorite stations, their favorite programs, they can just do it on their smartphone. You can do it too. You get that Faith Radio app through the Apple App Store or on Google Play. Pray you won't waste another minute. Download it and take us with you as you travel this season. You know, we try to cover a wide variety of topics on Live the Promise, and our goal is, behind the scenes, is deeper life and powerful life, that you would cultivate a deeper life and a deeper walk with the Lord, and it would translate into a powerful life on earth. We joke around behind the scenes, at least I do, that this is the no fluff zone. I don't want fluff. I don't want to stay in the shallows. We want to delve into the depths of God's love, to the depths of His Word, even to the depths and the core issues of what we're facing today. I really want you to think about that. If there are topics that I've not yet covered that you want to hear about, please feel free to email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Also, I appreciate a number of you email me once in a while and suggest guests as well. And if you want to do that, if you've got a favorite person you've heard from that I've not interviewed yet, let me know about it. Susie@myfaithradio.com. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get her on the show. Esther Havens is a humanitarian photographer, capturing stories that transcend a person's circumstances and reveal their true strength. And this is true. You look at her work, you'll be stunned. For many years, she's worked on social awareness campaigns with organizations such as Charity Water, Tom's Shoes, Warby Parker, and International Justice Mission. She was recently selected by Christianity Today magazine as one of the 33 under 33 Christian leaders shaping the next generation of our faith. While not traveling, Esther is currently home-based in Dallas, Texas, and she just told me before the show she just got back from Rwanda. So we got some good conversation ahead. Dear Esther, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So nice to meet you, and I can't wait to get your backstory and learn more about you, Esther. We love to start every day, every conversation with Scripture, and you chose Isaiah 41:10. So do not fear, for I'm with you. Do not be dismayed, for I'm your God. I'll strengthen you and help you, and I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Talk to us about that passage and why you chose it.
Yeah, that's one that stays with me on all my travels. I travel about 9 or 10 months out of the year to various countries around the globe. And I'm a person that most people wouldn't realize, but I have a lot of fear in me, and I've always had to battle that. I am not one to, like, ever let it take a hold of me. Like, I always want to face my fears. I just climbed Mount Kilimanjaro last week, and I'm terrified of heights. Terrified.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm going to face it and climb a mountain, because there's no reason to live in this fear that the enemy wants to, you know, take a hold of us and not let us live out our dreams and what the Lord called us to do. And so just knowing that, like, God is our strength in the midst of that, and that we do not have to give in to fear, and that truly with his strength, we can overcome all of our fears. That's just how what Isaiah 41:10 has spoken to me. And so anytime that fear starts to creep up, I literally was on Kilimanjaro reciting this over and over.
I wish I could hug your neck, Esther. I mean it. I'm so proud of you and impressed by you. Fear is something that's marked my life in so many ways, and have had to, you know, put many mountains and big mountains under my feet as well. But nothing like you. I mean, you're traveling the world to some of these dangerous areas. I never would have guessed you were someone who battles fear, and that just makes your calling all the more amazing to me. Why don't you give us a little backstory on your faith journey?
Yeah, no, I'd love to. I grew up in a Christian home. My parents loved the Lord and taught me all about him. But I honestly didn't have a close relationship with Jesus until I joined YWAM when I was about 18. I really struggled with self-worth. I really did not like the person God created me to be. And no matter what anyone said, it didn't matter, because I didn't believe it. And the Lord just took a hold of me and let me fall to the ground, to the point where I was just like, Lord, why did you make me? Like, why do I even exist? And I saw these visions of me with a camera, and it was so clear. The Lord was like, I made you to do something. Now follow me and walk. And I just felt like he was saying, I will open the doors if you follow me with this. And I loved photography, but I didn't really had no clue the adventure that the Lord had around the corner and what he wanted to do with it, and the ministry that he had in it. And so I did YWAM, and I went to India on outreach. And I tell people, like, I met Jesus in India, of all places in the world. I got to know him, because I feel like in a place, especially when, for me, India is a very spiritually dark place. And when I was there, I clung to Jesus like nothing else. You can see the light and darkness so clearly. And I wanted the light, all of it. And so Jesus, I just walked really closely with him. And I came back from that trip and had my camera in my hands, and I went for it. I was like, wherever you want to go, Lord, wherever it is, like, I'm all in. I will follow you.
Amazing.
And wow. it was unbelievable.
So Esther, when did the first doors open up to become a humanitarian photographer?
Yeah. So I met a couple of people. They started a conference in Fort Worth, and it was a photojournalism conference. And I went, and I remember just being inspired. It was all believers, and they traveled all over the globe with various ministries, and some of them, you know, magazines. There was Time Magazine, and they were all shooting photo stories. And I saw the impact that it could have. And so I was like, that is what I believe I'm called to do. And so I made some connections there and ended up on trips going to Peru. And I went to China at one point. And honestly, for me, it was just relationships, meeting one person, and that started an organization. I met Blake Mykoski, who started Tom's Shoes really early on. He had just gotten back from Argentina with his first batch of shoes. And I was like, what are these? Oh, and I remember my friend saying, these shoes are going to be a really big deal.
Wow.
I was like, okay, cool. And Blake invited me to go on their first shoe drop to South Africa. So I went and photographed that. And so I really got to see what photos could kind of do and how organizations could use them. I really had a really pivotal change in my, like, photo taking. I was on this path to create a really great portfolio, and I was in Congo shooting for an organization that was doing an AIDS story. And I remember taking a photo of a child who was malnourished. The belly was extended, and just got really excited about the photo that I captured. And the Lord stopped me in my tracks and convicted me of just how something he was calling me to, I had started to kind of go down a different path and was doing it for myself. Like, I was really excited. I was like, this is the photo of Africa I've always seen. This is the photo that, you know, wins prizes. And I was thinking about putting on my website, and I wasn't thinking about that child or the story or his family or his, like, it, that part. I didn't know the child's name, nothing. I was kept myself so distant. And so the Lord really convicted me and asked him to change my heart. Mm. And that's kind of when humanitarian photography, before that, I didn't even know what that was. I was like, the reason why I call myself that is I believe people come first. It's people first and then my camera, wherever I am. And the Lord gave me eyes to see people on my first trip in Rwanda. I was walking through this village, and I heard very distinctly in my spirit, my light shines upon them. And I realized I was viewing people in their circumstance and not for who they really are. It was, that's what I was photographing, just their circumstance. I said, okay, Lord, show me how you see these people. And I took this light and I made these portraits, and the people were so beautiful. Wow. I met this woman, Mpindabundi, and she was shining. And I, for the first time, realized, oh, this is what you wanted me to do, Lord. You wanted me to capture your beauty in the midst of all the suffering that exists around, because people who live in dire situations, they don't view themselves that way. You know, they don't see a mirror all the time to go, they don't even know what they get to look like. And so to be able to, like, stand with someone and say, you are beauty, because God sees beauty, and our world sees, you know, the outside appearance, and it might, you know, this woman could have flies on her face and dirt, be dirty, but the true beauty is who she's made to be in God, right? And I can photograph that and speak into that. And so that's kind of been my goal all along now, is wherever I go, whether it's with refugees or you know, in the Middle East or Asia or South America, is capturing the beauty in the midst of the hardest places.
That's an amazing story, Esther. And are you always busy, or do you kind of finish a trip and just wait to see who invites you where next?
I stay pretty busy, but yeah, it's kind of, I trust the Lord, and I tell people, missionaries all the time, I'm like, I kind of live the same way. Like, I truly try to live by faith with the work the Lord brings me of knowing what he wants me to do next. And it's always the most incredible opportunities, and it surprises me all the time. So.
So amazing. When we come back, we're going to talk about just some basic facts around refugees. If you've got a question for Esther, either about her humanitarian photography or about the refugee crisis, email Susie@myfaithradio.com. Remember, I've got two copies of Bethany Hoang from IJM, her book, The Justice Calling, Where Passion Meets Perseverance. Such a wise, insightful book. We've had her on the show plenty of times. And Gary Haugen, founder, president of IJM. His book is this big hardcover $30 book, The Locust Effect, Why the End of Poverty Requires the End of Violence. Email if you want in on the drawing for either of these books, Susie@myfaithradio.com, and we will be back in a minute. Love that song. Hope you're having a great day. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is With the Promise. Talking to Esther Havens. She is an amazing young woman. I'm telling you what, she's a humanitarian photographer for a lot of major nonprofit ministries like Tom's Shoes. Maybe you know about those shoes. International Justice Mission, to name a few. World Vision, in fact. You made a trip, Esther, to Lebanon. Is that right?
Yes.
Talk about that trip and give us a little insight into what's going on there.
Yeah, no, I would love to. I've been a huge fan of World Vision for years. I actually remember being a kid and we got their magazines in the mail and just thinking, oh, their photographs are so beautiful, and it actually opened up my eyes as a child to a world that, you know, I normally wouldn't see. And so I remember just being so inspired by that and wanting to see some of their programs. And so they asked me to come to Lebanon last fall. And I actually wasn't going to go because of the fear factor. And that verse that I mentioned to you earlier, Isaiah 41:10, has stayed with me. And just talking with a few people, my boyfriend, we started just kind of going through this question of what do we believe safe is? What do I think is safe? And I'm always thinking that, you know, I want to stay in a safe place. And am I safe at my home in Dallas? Am I safe where I am in the Middle East? And I just realized the safest place is where the Lord calls me to go. And the safest place is in His will and trusting Him wherever that is. Mm. And so I said yes. And I mean, literally, it was like email after email, like, I'm going to go. I'm not going to go. I'm going to. Mm-hmm. And I decided that I really I wanted to go meet these refugees that are living on the Syrian border and hear their story and tell it to the world. And so they invited me to go, and I got to meet some of the amazing men and women that have left Syria. And it was heartbreaking in so many ways because they have been through so much pain, and here they are living in a tent community on the border, just not knowing what is to come. There are so many questions that I had that I wanted to ask that I was like, ready. I'm like, okay, I want to know, what did you bring when you left your house? Like, what was it like? And most people, you know, they ran for their lives and didn't know what would be on the other side, but hoped that they would survive with their kids. And I didn't meet one person that didn't want to go back to Syria and loved their country. They just talked about how sweet the air is and how beautiful it was before. And so World Vision is doing incredible programs with them. We got to visit a children's facility where all these kids are getting to draw pictures and hang out, and they get to learn all sorts of things together. So I got to play with all the kids, and I loved that. And then we just got to walk through the tent settlement. And it was, you know, really at first I was like, I'm not sure how this will be. Will people even be open to my camera? A lot of refugee camps that you will go to, they are very hesitant to be photographed. And here, everyone wanted their photo. They were like, show my picture to the world. Tell them my story. Tell them
my
life. Wow. That's what I felt like. It was really very, very different than other places I've been. We ended up into this one family's home, a nude. And I could actually read you her story if you wanted.
Love it. Yeah.
I'll read it to you. We have it printed out. It's from her personal perspective. She was so sweet. She had a family, and we sat on her floor, and we said, can you tell us your story? And that's one of the biggest things I've learned in working with the different people all over the world is everyone wants to tell their story, and sometimes we just have to open our ears and listen. And so I just wanted to know it from her, and I'll read it to you. She says, I am from Homs in the south of Syria. We lived right in the heart of Homs. We own a grocery shop. We lived in a two-story house, and all the children, all six of them, were in school. I was born in 1977. At the beginning of the conflict, we stayed for 1 year, moving around to places that were considered safe. We went to Damascus for 4 months, but because of the bombardment, we were forced to leave. In May of 2012, we took the car and headed to the border and in Lebanon. Our documents were completely legal. We were able to cross the border and have our documents stamped. There were no problems. The only things we brought with us were our house documents, our IDs, our family IDs. At first, we thought we would be able to go back, and that's why we brought these documents with us. We locked the house when we left, but my husband went back to Syria a few years ago, and he checked one time, and everything was stolen. And then he stayed nearby for a period of time and then went back again, and the house was completely destroyed. My niece is still living near home, so with her husband in a tent settlement there. We communicate via WhatsApp and speak in codes and symbols. When she's telling me it's cloudy, it means it's kind of dangerous. And when she tells me it's raining, it means it's actually firing and bombardment. We didn't have any savings and didn't have time to bring anything with us from the shop. We just had to close everything down and leave as soon as possible. But thankfully, we are healthy and we are safe here. My siblings and some of the neighbors I had come here before us. So when we got here, they were able to help us in order to start building our shelter and our small tent. And slowly but surely, we started expanding so that it could accommodate 10 people naturally. When we first got here, I had to work day and night, hours and days on end, to receive a very minimal compensation that I would use to feed my family. Then we were able to register with the UNHCR and started to receive assistance. Today, we make our ends meet thanks to our friends at the UN and aid organizations like World Vision. But we live in a state of limbo, especially our children. They were forced to drop out of school, and now they can't learn, they can't work, they can't do anything that helps them advance in life. None of the children work aside from Ibrahim, my eldest. All they do is play and run all day. There is a school in an informal tent settlement where the children would go sometimes, but I don't let them go anymore because I can't make sure that it's always safe there. There has been not one day of happiness or joy since we have come here. I'm truly worn out and burnt out. It's very difficult for me to keep going, but the hope of returning has kept me going. I miss our country, of course, but it is impossible to go back right now. For example, if we went back, our children would be forced to join the military. My husband wasn't forced in the past because he had no siblings, so he was exempt from service. But now if he went back, he would be forced to join. This is unacceptable. In terms of the hopes for the future, my priority is education for my children. And then maybe, if possible, go back to our country, even if that means taking these tents and living in them. We don't mind. We just want to live safely. The best case scenario for us is that I think we end up in Canada. Based on my brother's experience, in Canada they have schools and they work and have a safe environment where they can thrive. The Canadian people have been very welcoming to him. We could go to any country in the world as long as our children were accepted there. Sometimes stereotypes can be established based on a few bad elements. For example, a lot are fearing that some of the refugees might go to Europe and some of them might start committing crimes. Sometimes Europeans can have this impression that this stereotype applies to all refugees. Like, most of them are delinquents, they are criminals, and that is very wrong, obviously. For example, I have 6 children, and each one of them is very different from the next. Each person is a unique individual, and you can't stereotype anyone because every person is responsible for their own actions. We cannot generalize. Our culture is known for hospitality and generosity. Syria is a beautiful country. The land, the food, the water, even the air there is different. Thank you for your efforts and for checking up on us and for even asking us to know more about how we are living and our situation in general. Thank you for that. So this is Anoud in Lebanon, and I just wanted you to hear from her voice about what she's been through.
It just leaves you speechless. And, I mean, I marvel at how, you know, she's worn out, she's been displaced, and yet what clarity she has around her story. I mean, wow.
She does. She does. And I think she understands that stereotype, you know, that so many of us can have of refugees as being dangerous, or people are scared of them. And it's like, she's the most beautiful, loving, hospitable woman, you know, and she wants the best for her kids. And one of the things that I've kind of decided to do, even here in America, is try to make some refugee friends, right? Mm-hmm. Find friends that know somebody so that I can learn about their culture and learn about who they are, and so that there is no fear there, you know, to hear what they've been through.
Wow. We're going to pause here for our break. Esther Havens just returned from Lebanon with World Vision. She's got more stories to tell. Got one copy of Gary Haugen's book, The Locust Effect, Why the End of Poverty Requires the End of Violence. Sorry about that. One copy of that. 2 copies of Bethany Hawang's book, The Justice Calling. Email if you want in on the drawing, and also include your questions. Susie@myfaithradio.com. Susie with an S at myfaithradio.com. More great conversation up ahead. Thinking lately how Jesus sent the disciples out and about, and he said, tell those that the kingdom of God has come and is near you, and heal the sick and tend to the poor. I mean, you think about God's heart is reflected through Jesus' heart, and look at the people that Jesus tended to. Really glad you tuned in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Talking to Esther Havens. She's a humanitarian photographer, and she just returned from Lebanon. I don't know how recently, but she just returned from Rwanda last week. She travels the world, captures these photos. And Esther, I got to ask you your website again. I spent quite a bit of time there, but I don't have it in front of me. In case folks want to look at your stunning work, what's your website?
Yeah, I would love to share. It is just EstherHavens.com.
Easy enough. EstherHavens.com. Yep. Go there, look at her blog. You'll get some stories there. Her pictures will make you gasp. They're so spectacular. It's really, you've got an amazing gift. So let's start here. Talk of some basic facts about the refugee crisis that we may not know.
Yeah, no. Most people don't know that it's the largest refugee crisis in the world right now. It's the largest in crisis in generations. And so most people are like, well, why should we care so much? And that is one of the reasons. It is absolutely one of the most difficult things for our generations to face, and we should be doing something about it. I think the challenge has been most people don't know what to do, right? Mm-hmm. There's 13.5 million people in need of humanitarian assistance right now, and that's across the globe. Most people have no idea. Most people also don't know that about 90% of refugees are still staying in the Middle East. Everyone's like, oh, they're scattering. And I'm like, no, they're actually in Lebanon and Jordan and Iraq and Turkey. They're all around there. And that's what's so great about organizations like World Vision, because they're in those countries actually working with the people, making sure they are supplying them with the things that they need, with shelter, with food and water, and education, and the things that will help them survive.
And they even create child safe zones. I thought that was absolutely amazing and so very necessary.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I loved that. That was the day that we got to go and play with the kids, and it was so wonderful, because a kid still just needs to be a kid at the end of the day, you know, to process their thoughts of what they've seen and heard. And I love that. I walked in and all the kids had their faces painted, and it was just beautiful to see in the midst, you know, of everything that they've been through, that I think it's just the most beautiful thing to be able to take a day off and not think about their hardships at home.
Amazing. And, okay, so say a bit more about World Vision's work in these different countries and what their aim is and what they're seeing.
Yeah. Well, from what I've seen personally, they had helped set up some of the tent resettlements, and were providing clean water and food and assistance, and even some financial assistance to the families, because they're not allowed to work in Lebanon. And so many families, if you can't work, you know, you're trying to live on this very small amount, and it's hard for them to survive. And there's no answer going like, oh, this is going to end in 1 year. And so that's been the challenge with, I think, especially with World Vision's work. You know, it's going to be for the long haul for right now. And they're doing incredible, and they're staying there. And there's a lot of organizations, you know, that don't go to those places. And that's what I'm so inspired about, is that they are on the border of Syria, you know, working in the places that not many will go to. Just hearing from the people themselves about how it has affected them daily. They're so, so grateful because they're able to eat, and able to have clean water. And so, I mean, my heart is so much in the humanitarian side of things. I want the world, of course, to know Jesus, but I also want the world to have their needs met. You know, people who are living in those situations are in so much pain, and it's so important for us as believers to go out and meet those needs, you know, even as Jesus did, you know, like, I was thinking about that verse, Matthew 25:35. I was hungry and you gave me food, and I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. And something that we so need to be reminded to do.
And is this accurate that about half of the refugees are children? Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean,
little ones running around everywhere.
Wow. I spent some time on the World Vision website, and some of these little children talking about how the bombs fell. And it was Aleppo video, but how these three little boys are talking about how their dad died right away, their mom died later, and now, I mean, you see them trying to be brave, and you see the trauma in their eyes. I mean, it's so unfathomable what these kids have endured, you know?
Yeah, it's very, very different. It's like, I tell people that a lot, and like, the majority of the world, that the people that I've met, they wake up to survive. Like, they don't, even dreaming is very hard for people to say, what are your dreams? Because, well, my dream is to live and survive this day. And they've seen so much pain and suffering. And I think that's many times what we forget, you know. We don't know that. But I'm also reminded how Jesus knows that suffering so well. Like, he knew it. And any time that I, like, will end up, I'm like, this story is tearing me apart, I just remember, like, Jesus knows suffering, and he walked in that too. And so I also want to identify and hear it. I know that many times it's therapeutic for people even to share their story, and I'm grateful to be able to share that with other people. And so,
boy, so great.
Yeah, it's definitely hard. It's a hard time in our nation and across the world when it comes to that. And so,
Well, Bethany Hoang's a friend of mine, and she's with IJM, and she's been in studio with us a number of times. Got a couple copies of her book, The Justice Calling. She explores a topic, and nobody explains it quite like Bethany, but about how we live in the tension of the blessing and the burden, so to speak, where the blessings that God has given us, you know, to be able to enjoy lunch out with a friend, which is just an unfathomable blessing, but to be able to really enter in and enjoy that, knowing that so many don't get to do that, enter in and enjoy it, but also step out and carry a portion of God's burden for the world, too. Living in the tension is just a constant thing. I mean, how have you learned to do that? Because I know that there's a measure of grace depending on all of our calls as far as how we walk this out. And some have, I mean, I look at Gary Haugen, who's president of IJM. I know he's grown into that amazing call, but he's got more, I think, empowering grace to do and see what he does than the person who maybe is just stepping out into this. You know what I mean? I feel like it's almost an acquired strength. How do you live in the tension of seeing what you see and still not dealing, I don't know, maybe this is the wrong way to ask it, but just constant blessing guilt because of the things that you actually do enjoy?
Yeah, no, I'm totally there, and I think about it all the time. I just wake up in the morning, okay, God's given me breath today and a gift on this life, and it's for a purpose. It's for his glory, right? And so I don't want to ever live that for me. I don't want to live it out for my glory or for my comfort. And so walking in that allows me, I feel like, to step into these places where that are not so safe, and knowing that the majority of the world, like, wakes up that way. And I didn't get to choose this life. I was put into it by the Lord for a reason. And I think part of that reason is so that we can go out and be a blessing to so many other people. I actually think about Gary Haugen a lot because I did a trip with them a couple years ago to Cambodia, and I came back and I started thinking, I was like, if he had gone down a different route and become a lawyer, he could have, like, not cared at all and just said, I'm just going to make a huge career for myself and not ever give money to any type of anti-sex trafficking or, you know, anything anti-slave, but he chose to follow where the Lord called him. And through that, thousands of people have been set free.
Yeah.
And that is through the Lord. That's the Lord's grace right there. That's where I see, like, the Lord wants to use us to be a part of his good work here on this earth, you know? And there are people day in, day out, like with World Vision every day, and they are there in the midst of it serving these people. And maybe it's that we can't go. Maybe it's not that, you know, you need to be on the ground and be a humanitarian relief worker, but that you have a great job and you're able to fund these organizations because they can't continue to function without the funding. And so it's like, that's where I see it. We all have a part in it. We have a part in doing God's work here on this earth. And it truly, truly is his work.
Indeed, indeed. Richard Stearns of World Vision says, we must never lose our capacity to feel outrage when human beings are so callously slaughtered. And then we must turn that outrage into action. Pray, give, raise your voices in support of these Syrian families. If I remember right, Gary's story, you know, he was a civil rights attorney for the U.S. on loan from the U.S. to the U.N. to investigate the Rwandan genocide. I think he was the head lawyer. Imagine trying to get your arms around the genocide after the fact. And he was standing on a mound of dirt, and he slipped kind of in the mud, if I remember right, and landed. It was like a mass grave of bodies. And it was like it awakened him to the idea of the injustice, the atrocities in our day. And he stepped away from a lucrative career to be a voice for the voiceless. And I think he started in his garage or in his house. But really, his whole mindset is, yes, feed the poor, but if you never confront the bullies who are keeping the poor poor, the poor will always be poor. And so he used his lawyering and his kingdom mindset and started this organization that's taken the world now by storm. But that's him. Now you had fear and you had a camera. And so you said, change my heart. You know, you had this fear and you had a camera and you said, change my heart and look what you're doing. I just think these are stories that are mind boggling. So somebody listening today, maybe they have a pen. Speak to them. Maybe they've got a total inferiority complex, but they have a knack with words. What word of encouragement would you say to them?
Yeah, I would say really seek the Lord and ask him what he wants. I think right now our culture especially speaks to us so much. What do you want? What do you want to accomplish? And I just firmly believe our life is to give it up for the Lord. And so ask the Lord, say, how do you want me to use this gift you've given me? How do I use it for your glory, not for my gain or for, you know, to promote myself, but how do you use it as an honor to the Lord, to bless his name and to the bless his people, you know? And so just remembering too, there's verses about, you know, whoever does this to the least of me also does it to me. So like remember, like our talents and our gifts and our professions can serve the Lord. And that could be a janitor. Like I have friends that, you know, they have jobs they don't love, but I'm like, every day if you wake up and you're like, God, I'm going to do this job, not for myself, going to do it to glorify you. It's really surprising what he starts to do in the midst of that, because he'll show you the joys that can be in it. And I'll remind people in that, like, I have friends who, you know, make less than $3 a day in other countries. And I sometimes tell them, I'm like, well, how much debt do you have? And they're like, well, I don't have any debt. And I'm like, well, I have some friends who are in debt, maybe $300,000. I was like, I think you are richer than them. And their mind is just blown.
Good word.
But it's true, right? Mm-hmm, it's just like that's like you've gone from like this lowest of low to like, oh, wait, I'm not. And I was like, you can do this. You totally just start saving your money. Little by little, you can get out of this place that you're in and you don't have to stay there. And it's many times too that oppression that takes over, right? That keeps us in those spots that we don't listen to the Holy Spirit. We're listening to the enemy.
Yeah.
And the enemy is stopping us from what the Lord wants us to do. And the biggest thing I think to remember is don't do it for yourself. It's not about us here on this earth. It isn't. It's about him. Mm. And so when it is about him, like he changes our hearts and literally makes it like us love his people and opens our hearts to just, I think, see people in a different way than we normally would.
Love that. And it's like, you know, and again, Bethany talks about that too, getting rid of the hero complex, because it's not about us. It's his kingdom has come and will be done. And this is his idea. This isn't a trendy thing to tend to ideas of justice. This was God's original idea always. And what's amazing to me is he says, give to the poor and you lend to the Lord. He will repay you. His heart is so tied to the poor. He's like, if you take care of them for me, you're actually borrowing to me and I will make sure to repay you. That blows my mind, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a pastor years ago, and I remember him saying this in a sermon. He said, if you want to see Jesus, if you are doubting, he's like, go spend time with the poor. Hmm. He goes, I promise you will find Jesus there. And it is so true.
Wow.
Like, in the most dire situations, it's like he's with the brokenhearted. He's with those who are hurting. Hmm. And that is something that I learn so much from people who are living in stuff doesn't matter to them, like, at all. And so especially in those places, and like they've lost everything, but many people still have hope and they hold on to that hope of like, I want to go back to Syria. I want to go back to the friends that I had, and I want my children to have an education. And so I'll ask those questions of like, what is that hope that you still have? Because I think almost everyone still has it in the most dire situation.
Mm, boy, so good. Talking to Esther Havens again, get to her website, estherhavens.com, see her amazing photography. When we come back, Esther, I want to know just how you're different now that you've made some trips around the world, and then how we can specifically pray for these families. Just to know that families want to get back to their homeland and want their kids to get back in school, you can pray for that. You know what else you can do? Send a few bucks to World Vision or to IJM or a ministry like that, tending to the needs of the poor and to the needs of justice. I'm going to you got to come back, Esther, because there's so much more we got to talk about. But we got another great segment up ahead with Esther Havens. We'll be back in a minute. A few stats around World Vision's work in the world. They've reached approximately 2.4 million people affected by the Syrian crisis between 2011 and 2015. World Vision is working in Turkey, Lebanon, Jordan, Iraq, and within Syria itself. It's providing food, clean water, sanitation services, and relief supplies like clothing, blankets, household personal items, equipping health facilities, providing programming designed to protect children, just to name a few things. Talking to Esther Havens today, she's a humanitarian photographer. She's worked with a number of nonprofits. She went to Lebanon with World Vision, just came back from Rwanda. And if you just tuned in, you got to go back and hear the whole conversation. We've had such a fantastic talk. But But I want to know for you, Esther, at the open of the show, you said, you know, you your life, really, you battled fear. And I just, that's, again, I relate so much to that. And yet, God has called you to really dangerous places and to capture the stories and then come back and tell us about them. How are you different as you've followed God's call in your life?
Yeah, no, that's a huge one. How am I different from all of that? I would say I live in the moment a lot more than I ever did in the past. That is what has changed a lot in me. I think that I have realized that our days are numbered and the Lord knows when that is. And so, that thinking about that has challenged me. I think to take more risk, right? And things that do scare me, and going to places that I might be fearful of or meet people that I might be fearful of or who are different than me. And through that process, I learn how amazing and wonderful people are and how I shouldn't be scared in the places that I think are scary. A lot of that's just made up in my mind.
Wow.
And so definitely the most changes I've seen.
Amazing. Well, Esther, I think you said something like 80-90% of refugees are still, they're not here. They're over there, so to speak. And as you're learning their stories, they're not even trying to get here. They want to go back to their homeland. Some want to go back to Syria where they can get back to their neighbors and their friends and get their kids back to school. So that's one way that people can pray specifically. What are other specific ways we can pray for this crisis?
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, what I many times do is I will look up a photo, and there's lots of photos on my website, on my Instagram, on World Vision, and I start praying for the person in the photo. That's personally what I do. Many times, I've told people, I said, I'll pray for you. That is one thing I know all of us can, with all of us do. The other thing is really supporting the work. Like I said earlier on the show, like, I believe we all have a part, and some of that is to go, some of our part is to go and do humanitarian work and be the hands and feet on the ground and delivering assistance and making sure people's needs are met. And for some, the goal is to fund those programs so that it continue to happen. They go hand in hand. And so for some people, they've been blessed abundantly with finances, and they're able to fund that. And so that's my challenge to so many people, is to go and fund those programs. World Vision is a great one. I absolutely believe in their work. I've seen it myself. And they have a refugee responder program that you can give to. And so you can find that on their site. And you can give monthly, or you can give a certain amount. I love giving monthly to programs, because just so much easier, and to know that I'm giving continuously throughout the year has been really, really great to see. And knowing that it really does affect the lives that are there. Like I said, I've been there. I met the people. I met the people getting assistance of clean water and food and shelter. I know their names. And I know that it's making a difference, and it's helping them to survive there. And so I think, those two are the biggest things that I've seen. And continuing to have the conversation, that's one that I want to have. Just even talking with you, it brings me so much joy to be able to share the stories. There's a lot of people that don't know about it because they haven't researched. I was at a car place the other day, and I was telling the woman at the car place, I said, you know, I want to show you my Syrian friends. Can I tell you about their story? And she didn't know that, you know, most people still lived in the Middle East and they want to stay there. That she didn't know that part. And so I think really educating ourselves is huge.
Wow. Well, several months ago, a survey showed that American Christians are less likely to pray for and help refugees now than they were a year ago. Is that fear? What is that? Busyness? What is that?
I'm not sure. I personally don't know what that is. I think part of it is that busyness is, like, in the last week, I've seen more engagement in my refugee stories than any other. And I'm really, really grateful. I would love for that to stay. I would love, if you are standing up for refugees, like, let that stay and really find out who's doing what and how we can support them. And, don't let it just be a fad, because sometimes that happens. It's super important, you know. It's people's lives.
You've seen on it. Yeah, firsthand, those who've been benefactors of World Vision because somebody gave. I mean, for them, you know, they received something that they wouldn't have received if somebody wouldn't have given. And that's why we always say, give a gift, change a life. And my hubby and I went to Guatemala with IJM, and those precious people in these little villages wrapped their arms around us, thanked us as if we were the ones who confronted their bullies. We weren't. We were just people who gave, but they didn't care. It was like it narrowed the gap between that gift given and the life changed. They just saw it as, no, I mean, I'm freer that my offender, so to speak, is in prison because because of you. And it's like, I wanted to just empty my checkbook after that, you know? Wow. Well, I remember Go ahead. You want to speak to that?
I think that, you know, it's just, we all have a place in that. I try to imagine myself in that person's situation. So if you had to flee your country and you had nothing left and you ran to the border, how would you want to be treated? Right. So if you imagine yourself as that, like, let's treat others the way that we would want to be treated.
Boy, I can't remember if this was your website or if this is World Visions, but Ann Voskamp is also a friend and she's been on the show plenty of times, but I got to read this quote before we wrap up and pray. It gave me holy goosebumps when I read it. But she says, isn't this good? Now is the time for the church to be the church. In the past, the church may have been defined by what the church is against. But in this defining moment in history, may the church be clearly defined by what it's for. And the church has always been for the stranger, the sojourner, and the welcoming arms of the Savior. How can we not move heaven and earth to let the broken in when heaven moved and came to earth to let us in? I couldn't say it any better.
Yeah.
Wow.
Beautiful. I love her.
I do too. And I love you, Esther. You're just a little firecracker. I just love what you're doing. I love what God's doing through you. And I want to just extend an open door invitation that if you've ever come back from a trip that you just got to tell somebody about, you give us a call, email us, and say, I got some more stories to tell. We want to keep those stories out there because we're all a part of them and we can all play a part in tending to these needs in the world.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. And as we get ready to wrap here, I'm wondering if you would pray for the American church, that each of us would not be swallowed alive by this burden and we wouldn't turn a deaf ear, that we would be quickened in our own spirits to know exactly specifically what steps we are supposed to take. Because if we each do that thing, we'll make a world of a difference. So would you pray in that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. Father, I just pray for all of the listeners right now, Lord, that, Lord, you lay it on our hearts, Lord, what you've called us each to do in response to so many people in the world that are hurting, that are sick, Lord, that are running for their lives. I pray, Jesus, that you will open our hearts to feel what they feel and to even experience, Lord, what they've experienced. Lord, give us compassion and empathy that we've never had before. I pray, Lord, that even through this show, Lord, that people just begin to want to step out and know more. God, I thank you for every single one of these listeners. I pray, Lord, that you bless their lives. And God, continue to open our eyes to see what you see. Give us your heart for your people. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Esther, thank you for all you do, and thank you for giving us your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you. Such a gift.
God bless you. We're going to listen to a portion of a song. Just prayerfully listen to this song, and I dare you to ask God as you listen, what would you have me do? Lord, what would you have me do? Remember this, his yoke is easy, his burden is light, and his assignment for you is absolutely, utterly doable. Wow, I love that conversation. Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson, and in just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. It really is all about God. Here am I. Send me. Use me. And he will use you to change the world in some significant way. Coming up next, you remember the film War Room? Remember Priscilla Shire's husband in that movie, T.C. Stallings? Well, he's up next, talking about playing on God's team. Another great conversation up ahead, so don't go away. Hour 2 is up next. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Live the Promise. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend. Help grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and then never miss a show.